Awkward people, Stephanie and I are super excited to announce a new partnership that we have with a swinging community site called SDC. Now, the way that we're going to handle this one is this is where we're going to communicate from now on with anybody that we want to play with, because SDC has a great way of letting us figure out exactly what somebody is. It's going to ask all the right questions. I get to know what their height, their weight, their play preference. All kinds of pictures, they can upload videos, and it makes it super easy to search and verify location on. So we figured, hey, if they're gonna let us play and advertise, that's probably gonna be the right site for us to use, right, Steph?
Absolutely. I mean, it makes sense.
It's like window shopping now. Steph can just jump on and whoever she likes, boom, right there. Now, if you wanna make sure that you get connected with us on that site, sign up through our link, awkward. XXX.com. Anybody that signs up there, we will find out. Now, maybe not immediately because we're still learning, but we will find you and we will send you a message saying, hey, thank you for joining. And it'll be a great way for us to connect and have unfiltered conversation together. So we're really looking forward to it. And hopefully, we'll see you online at Awkward. XX. So I feel like this is one of those items that everybody always laughs about. Like you kind of saw it in movies, you're like, oh, it's a penis pump, you know, and you're thinking, what is the point of that? Well, you know, along with all of this fame that I've been given through this podcast, Bathmate was kind enough to send me a penis pump to try out. Now, I told him, you know, on a good day, I'm pushing 9 inches. He sent me the Hydro Extreme 7. And I was hesitant to use it at first because, again, I don't really feel like I need this. But the way they explained it to me is this is kind of like a workout. My dick is like an athlete, like a professional athlete, like, let's say, an NFL player. And it needs to work out daily. So I need to pump iron with this thing about 3 times a day. Do 3 minutes of pumping, and then maybe 2 minutes of what we call jelking. And we do that 5 times a week, so 15 different sessions. To say that Stephanie can feel a difference is, I mean, it goes without saying. I can feel a difference because I'm feeling parts of Stephanie I've never felt before. So I know she can feel a difference. Y'all, it's fun. It feels pretty good. And I mean, it boosts the confidence. I think you should check it out. Go ahead and get one for yourself. bathmatedirect.com/StephanieClassX.
Hey Jason, I think it's time for some shameless self-promotion.
All right, babe, what do you got on your mind?
Well, we've been talking about the spicy pages a lot on the podcast, but I think it's time that we finally invite them in and let them see what it's all about.
Yeah, okay. I mean, everybody always wants to know how to get involved and all that kind of stuff. And the first way to get involved is to, you know, actually see what it is that we do. All of our stuff is so real and so raw.
Right.
But how are you thinking we do it, like movie announcer style?
Sure, we can give it a try.
All right, let's give it a go. In a world where ordinary podcasts just aren't enough, two podcasters with incredible genitalia break free from the mic to bring you an awkward experience like no other. Exclusive content awaits at virginitysnatchers.com.
Dive deep behind the scenes and join us for unfiltered, uncut, and undeniably wild adventures.
Don't just listen, be a part of the journey.
You can come watch me take every single virginity, see close-ups as they enter my pussy for the first time, and get an even closer look into our kinky world.
How was that for dramatic?
I mean, it was dramatic. It might be a little over the top, but I think they'll get the point.
All right. Well, if y'all want to reach out to us, you check out our paid pages. You can find them all on virginitysnatchers.com. Love to interact. We love to do custom content, and we love to help answer your questions. If you need a guaranteed response, you find us on there. If you want to support us, that's the way to do it. Now,
let's get back to the show.
You're listening to the Awkward Pillow Talk podcast. I'm your host, Jason Klass, along with my wife, OnlyFans model and self-proclaimed awkward chick, Stephanie Klass. We're here to get the awkward stuff out of the way.
This podcast is a true representation of our journey through anxiety and learning to love sex. If any of that offends you, we'd like to say, fuck you.
Bonjour from Paris.
Welcome back. And you're still listening to the number 3 podcast on sexuality in the United Arab Emirates.
Yes.
I'm not sure, again, if that's a good thing. There could be like 2 people listening.
Right. And that could just be.
But you know what?
The reason.
I'm going to take that as a brag. Number 3.
Having visited the UAE, I guarantee you there's more than 2. I know that country very well.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fantastic.
That's awesome.
We've had family that's lived there.
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
But we have not personally been there. And we do actually have quite a few fans from there, believe it or not. Yeah. So I guess I'm maybe discounting myself a little bit. But let me introduce real quick our guest today,
yes,
who is Carl Wilder. And Carl, when you sent me the picture of Carl, mm-hmm, you sent me a picture of a man laying naked on his bed.
Yes. Yes, so, I did.
That was my first impression of you, Carl. How are you going to make that up to me now?
I'm naked in my bed. What do you want from me?
I love it.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Carl.
Okay. Well, I work in event planning now. And so I have a wonderfully interesting job, but that is not what I have always done. I was a chef. And during the lockdown, I wrote a book about how I became a chef and how I became a voiceover artist for a very particular type of film, as well as recordings that went over the telephone. Back then, they were called 976 recordings.
Okay.
Is that, we're talking like the 1-800 sex hotline stuff.
No, these were 976.
Is that what you're talking about?
The 1-minute voice recordings, yeah. I got my start doing those. Are we censored at all?
You got to tell me about that.
Are we censored at all?
Totally uncensored.
Okay. So I answered an ad in some San Francisco publication that said, can you write? Do you have a great voice? Come on down. We're doing these 1-minute recordings. And I was in college and I needed extra money. So I went down and met with the woman whom I'm actually still friends with to this day. She also lives in Europe now.
Awesome.
And her husband, who is a sound engineer. And he said, well, let's just see if we can improvise one. He was a little ADD as well. So I went into the recording studio back behind the pool. And he said, I need gay sex.
Okay.
Okay. Down on your knees, boy. That's right. You know you want it. Get down there and take it. Oh, mister, it's so big. Oh, mister, I don't know if you can. And then I did the voices, blah, blah, blah. Oh, mister, thank you for sharing your pickle juice with me. We actually said things like zucchini, I forgot, not Tootsie Roll. What the fuck is that? Hostess cream cake cream. And we used every euphemism under the sun because we couldn't have dirty words. No wonder I became a chef. I used food analogies. Zucchini with mushroom dip, the special cream, all that kind of bullshit. So I started with gay phone sex.
That makes it a little easier to get through, though, you know?
Yeah.
It's not your natural inclination to go for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, go ahead.
I had to learn how to make pee sounds so they sounded like they were growing on skin. I had to learn what kink was, and that was a trip and a half. So are you surprised I wrote a book about the experience? I was so naive.
That makes perfect sense.
We learned so much. So I think a mirrored experience to that would be us getting into Sex Panther, which I'm not sure if you've heard of that, but it's an online platform essentially where adult workers can sext. And you send these videos back and forth. And part of that is also you can do voice chats and stuff like that.
Yes.
So it started out with her, and she was pretty damn good at it.
Right.
And I was like, you know, I'll try it. Like, I don't think anybody would be into it, but I've got a decent voice, you know? Like, people usually go for it.
Right.
I was starting to get these calls. And again, I'm not gay, but, like, I'm open enough with my sexuality. Like, I'm not bothered by anything, you know? So, like, yeah, if you're going to pay me, I'll I'll voice act whatever.
Right. You'll
and
just,
I was getting this dude that was like, all right, I want you to act like you're a college dude and you have an obsession with Taylor Swift and all of your friends are going out partying, but all you want to do is stay at home and jerk off to Taylor Swift's poster.
Oh my God.
And yeah. I was talk like,
the wonder bread of the music world.
I was like, all right, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Right. It was like, what, $10 a minute or something like that?
Yeah.
You know,
and it wasn't just like one time. It was like a recurring.
No, dude, I've had like hour-long conversations about T Swift and how much she means to me.
Oh my God.
So I mean, yeah.
But it's my day. It was Helen Reddy, so you know.
You know, it's funny though because it's like it's not something that I'm into.
Or but, you thought like. Ever
or
thought,
that I thought
like,
anybody would be into, but being right. able to like come out and do it for somebody else, you know, it kind of lets you open up your horizon and just be like, okay, well, if this dude is comfortable enough to tell me about his Taylor Swift kink, then, you know, maybe I can be comfortable enough to say, hey, can I lick your ass? You know?
Right.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. No, I ended up working for, a number of people. I did designed ads for Hustler magazine and then took classes that they gave. They had classes, literal classes for the phone sex operators. And it was all about keeping them on the phone because it was a per minute charge. Right. So we had this lovely Uruguayan woman teaching the class and she goes, Noreen, what do you say if he says he wants to talk to your 13-year-old daughter? I would call the police. No, you would say, let me go get her, and you would make him wait for 10 minutes. So she finally came to me and she said, what would you do if someone wants you to be a Boy Scout? Oh, mister, I need to put my uniform on. Can you wait while I take all my clothes off? I like to wear the brown underwear with my uniform because the uniform's khaki. Oh. And I could make them wait for me to get dressed for half an hour. I never did the live phone sex, but I ended up giving some workshops on how to.
That's awesome. Okay.
I did sales and I learned that, you know, there's obviously a lot of comparison between this stuff. Like if you look at sex work as like a actual business itself and you treat it like a funnel, it works like that.
Right.
So there's friends of ours. Business. Oh, well, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's hard for some people to comprehend it, you know?
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that don't believe
there's a lot of people that, you know, I'll tell friends, hey, I got to work. And they're like, yeah, you got to work. And I'm like, no, you don't understand.
It's work. I had to learn about kink and I had to then write it into scripts. I had to create pee sound effects. I had to learn what fist fucking was. I mean, I had to do a lot of stuff and that was just. And that was before I got involved with voicing the porn. But the one thing, and this is, do you know the Rialta Report? Have you heard this podcast?
No.
I don't think so, no.
You really should. The Rialta Report goes back to all of these people who are now senior citizens who participated in the golden age of porn, right?
Uh-huh.
And they talk to them human to human. So they get their stories about the business, of course, but they also get their stories about who they are. What their life was like, who their parents were, et cetera. And I knew a lot of these people because I did voices for their loops. And I really appreciate that podcast because people think of sex workers as fantasy, and that is the role that you play. That is the work that is being done.
Right.
But they're human beings. And some of them were very good friends of mine. Some of them were role models and people who really helped me to grow up the way I needed to in this world. And
it is crazy the connections and the people that we've met. Like, some of the best people I've ever met are doing this line of work. And previously, I never would have imagined that it was these type of people, you know, until you get involved, until you say, okay, I'm going to let my guard down.
Right.
And I'm going to see these people for who they are and
as
not for the job
people.
That they have. Right. You're like, holy shit, these people are incredible. Like,
they're cooler than our real friends. Like, in some ways, like, you know, you get along better with them because they're unfiltered.
But what we're finding is our community, especially our age group, it is really hard for us to create that community. A lot of the ones that are working hard are isolating themselves. because we find we don't have many people we can talk to. You know, it's hard to relate to the issues that we have. Like, you know, you've understood some of the kinks and how dark some of them can get and wild some of these requests are. Sometimes you just have to talk it out to somebody and just say, hey, let's listen to how crazy this shit was. You know what I mean? It's out. You know, you can laugh about it. And you're like, okay, now I can laugh about it because I've
gotten
it out.
Right, because at the time, you were like, this is not terrifying, but like, it's dark.
But until I got it out, it was like, you know.
You didn't know how you feel about it.
It's not even like we do things that are that sketchy.
No.
But it's like, even guys that have been like shrunken down into little men, you know what I mean? You got to think about it. Like, I got to like take this seriously for them because this is their kink.
Right. It's serious to them.
There's a lot of people with kinks.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and they're wild.
Right.
Wild.
You know, like,
we don't judge as long as it's legal. That's our thing. I mean, obviously, we don't condone any of that shit. But like, as long as you can keep your kink legal and you can use it as an outlet, I mean, there's a sex worker out there that can at least help you figure it out too, I'm sure. But
right,
like, yeah, goddamn,
are you familiar with some of the classic the porn stars of the golden age?
Well, I've named my cat after Ron Jeremy, but other than that, that is it. I'm not sure he's the golden age though. I think he's more
just
like
past golden age. He was video age.
Okay.
Jamie Gillis and Paul Thomas.
No,
I'm not sure.
I called Jamie Gillis Uncle Jamie. I met him in an antique store and I just voiced one of his loops. I approached him and I said, are you left-handed? You know, and that we were friends until the day he died. He was the best man at my wedding. Yeah. Carol Doda, who was the stripper who was famous for the silicone tits in San Francisco, was the matron of honor. These people were people to me, but Jamie had a kink. Jamie was bisexual and he liked to go to porn theaters showing his movies and fuck men in the audience while they were watching him fuck a woman.
Okay.
That was his kink, to convince a man very specific.
Yeah.
And he was amazed at the number of people who went for it. And they did. And so that was his kink. Paul Thomas had a similar kink. He liked to go and orally service gentlemen in the audience. He liked it really sleazy while they were watching him fuck a woman on screen.
Okay.
That was his kink.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got, you know, something.
I guess you get to a certain point, too, I'm sure, where, like, it's, you've done it all, and just in order to feel something, you just got to go extra wild.
Right.
That was Jamie, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like I'm going to be protected from that, simply because I got into this because I genuinely like my wife. So, at the end of the day, if I'm just fucking her, it's cool.
Not saying but
I can see how these people that do have, like, a single person that comes into this and does not have that, like, restraint or that person, that constant,
that's,
and they can just
ground
go
them
out and get whatever the fuck they want. I think of it like now when I can order DoorDash and I'm hungry.
That's what it was like for them, yeah.
It's like I'm hungry, but I've had so much to eat that I've had whatever I wanted for so long that I just have no appetite for anything.
Right,
I need to eat, but nothing is appetizing.
Right.
So let me go find the weird thing. You know, let me try that restaurant I never tried before because maybe they can bring me something that'll excite me.
That'll satisfy me.
Well, I worked in food tourism for many, many years, and so I was around the world tasting almost everything, and I'm still like that. There are things I always will love, like bread and cheese in Paris, which is where I am right now. But there are things that I crave from countries that are very exotic, like tarantulas stir-fried with chili and garlic.
Okay. They're incredible. Lost me there.
They're incredible. They're like soft-shell crab.
Is that Vietnam? Where is that?
Yeah, where's
Vietnam.
That at?
Okay.
Vietnam. I was like,
that sounded very Vietnam to me.
I was like, hey, yeah, that was not a, you know, couldn't figure out where that one was.
Yeah, that was Vietnam and Cambodia. And they're delicious. They're like soft-shell crab. They're related to soft-shell crab.
Okay.
They're the insects of the sea, lobster, you know.
I have said that many times, but not in a positive way.
Yeah, well, I say it in a positive way.
We live right next to the ocean, so we see them constantly.
Yeah, well, not tarantulas, crabs.
We're in Florida, on the east coast of Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why you're tan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We live in paradise every day. Just, you know, it's
Every day is sunshine.
Yeah, we moved from Virginia, though, once we started being able to make a living doing this.
Yeah.
I was in real estate, and I was doing pretty well in that.
You're similar.
I didn't get to see her. So, you know, there is similarities for sure.
Yeah.
I like that I can be less filtered in my speech.
Yes.
You know, here.
Yeah.
And I like that it's more okay for beautiful women to approach me for sex here. It was more frowned upon in the real estate industry.
More, you know.
In fact, like, I'd say entirely.
Entirely frowned upon.
People did it anyway. Let me tell you,
they did. Well, yeah, they did. I did not get that memo, though.
Or those, you know.
Or those invites.
Those clients.
You know, so that's okay. No pity party for me. I've gotten my fair share.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for you.
But it is really cool to listen to your insight on this, because I'll be honest, for us, we are completely disconnected from the rest of the creator world, or a lot of the creator world.
Yeah.
And we're not necessarily, I don't think we'll ever go necessarily like adult industry.
Right.
Because I am too much of a control freak to ever imagine letting somebody have a director control over her. And we're like making enough money from it anyway. So it's like, why the fuck would I give somebody else the rights to it? But yeah, regardless, I don't see us going into that realm.
Don't do it, because it's changed. It used to be about people who really considered themselves artists wanting to put out a quality product, and they cared about every aspect of it. And now it's just, let's get some shit on video. Let's be degrading to women. And we don't give a shit as long as we make $15, you know? It's really gotten back.
See, my stuff is art.
No.
I have an art, sir. I have an absolute art here. And mine is that we do things uniquely. Do we not?
We do.
We come up with games to do.
Yeah.
Or crazy scenarios that have not been done before. And I feel like that is what puts us apart. Like, so we've done this one thing. I got this from nowhere, but...
Right.
Old adult magazines, right?
Right.
I figured, for what we're doing, I'm a photographer. She takes dirty photos. Let me go buy a shit ton of these, right? And now I've got scenes for days that I can just be like, hey, take this pose. We're just going to open up a magazine, and then boom, that pose. So I thought about that for solo stuff. I was like, that was really good. And then I was like, what if we just got a guy and brought him over, and we were just like, make sure he's tested, whatever. And on the first meet, we say,
open up
you
the
have
magazine.
To open up this book.
Pick a magazine out of
you
this
and
pile.
Her are going to recreate this. Just a raw, like,
they're seeing it for
totally
the first
nervous
time.
Scene. You know, she's nervous, he's nervous. They've never been with each other, and now we're saying,
we're
do it.
Create
which I understand happens in the porn industry
quite
often. But to do it in this aspect, in her, she's super anxious on top
all
of
the
it.
Time.
it was a really cool dynamic, and something that I do hope we've done it a few more times.
Right.
But it was a really interesting. And I don't see very many people getting creative. I see it's like, let's put a camera up, let's fuck, and then whatever we get is what we get, and we're going to put it up for like $5 and hope that a bunch of people buy it.
I think your idea of going for those old magazines is a good one, because, again, they had art directors. They cared about the images they were presenting, and they cared about the scenarios that they were creating. I was on a number of adult film sets over the course of my years, because I won't say his last name, even though he has passed away, but Joe, who got me into the film side, contacted Janice in San Francisco and said, you got anybody? I need a guy with a flexible voice who can do a lot of shit, because he had a ton of 8mm that he wanted to get onto video. At the time, you know, because I'm a touch older than you guys, they wanted to get every piece of crap ever made in any part of the world onto video, because the adult market for home viewing was, and most people didn't rent something twice. They rented it once. So I remember going down to LA, and he showed me loops, and I had to voice all of the men in the loop, and some of them were gay loops, some of them were straight loops, and I had to be every male.
Can I pause you for a second?
Yeah.
She does not know what a loop is.
A loop
is like, a 7-minute.
Go ahead.
It's a 7-minute grindhouse film. There used to be adult movie theaters where you would put quarters in them, and they would pay 3 minutes of a movie. So you could watch the whole movie with 3 quarters, and move between booth and booth. You would select the movie you wanted. They're loops. They just play on a continuous loop.
Okay, so like in,
like we saw in the show.
Okay.
I wanted you to be able to picture it.
Okay, what I was picturing.
Was it? Okay, yeah. I for some reason, was just like, you're thinking like a looped video, which is essentially the same thing. But
yeah, yeah. Like, no. I don't remember what the TV show was, but okay. Yeah. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
That's all right. So there were a lot of loops, and I started with the loops, and I was flying back and forth between San Francisco and Los Angeles. And then I took a two-week vacation to Italy, right? And I thought, okay, Joe, I'm not going to work for 2 weeks. I'll go have a good time, kid. And I got to Italy and an accident happened. I finished culinary school and I went into a restaurant and had my first risotto with shaved truffle and a duck egg. And I, in my bad Italian, thought I asked the chef to teach me how to make that. The chef thought I was asking for a job. So I accidentally got myself a job. And when I went home to his place for lunch, his son Stefan spoke some English, and he said, "No, he don't teach you just risotto. He teach you everything. You know, I'm working for my father." And I said, "Well, my flight is out in 4 days. Change it. We need you for Carnival. That is when we are busy." So Carnival ends. I end up staying with his sister because her son's away at college, and this beautiful old Venetian home that, you know, with the big first floor that's not used, still lit by candles when it's lit at all, and the modern second floor and the bedrooms on the third floor. Incredible home, going to private carnival balls, having a moment with her, and who was 25 or something like that years my senior. And then I said, okay, now I go back. And they said, "No, you go to Verona." Because Tomas, he had a baby. And so he's taking a month. So there's a ticket and here's your pay. And you go Verona. So wherever I went, I was sent somewhere else. And this kept on for years, almost 3 years. And I kept being passed from place to place to place. Well, I had to call Joe and say, "Joe, I can't do this anymore. You know, I'm going to stay in Italy, it looks like, for a little while." So I get on the phone with a call center, something you before your birth, where you pay so much per minute to talk to California. And I got Joe on the phone. I said, "They want me to stay." "No problem, kid. We'll get your stuff from your apartment. We'll put it in storage. We'll bring your dog. Stay as long as you want. All Italy, I got people. I got people everywhere in Italy. You tell me where you are. I send you a capo. We get you set up with recordings. We'll keep you working. You're good at this. We're not going to lose you." So that's how I moved all over Italy, working as a chef and going to recording studios and garages and attics and the top floors of whatever, and doing 100 voices and writing scripts, rewriting scripts that had been badly translated. And I just got involved in this whole world and had a blast doing it.
That's awesome.
I love your mentality, which kind of seems like it's just like you're floating and you just kind of like take the opportunity as they come.
That's awesome, yeah.
And to me, that's what I do.
That's you.
But
yeah, I think we may have a lot in common. Yeah,
I'm an opportunist. Like it.
Yes, I like schedules, but like I can go with the flow when he's like, "Hey, we're gonna like flip from thing to thing."
Well, sometimes you just gotta catch the vibe for something and be like, "I'm getting good energy over here, so I'm gonna float this way for a little bit."
Yeah. You
know? Right. And I'm all for floating in the right way. And I love doing the work. And then I got cast in the musical Hair after working for a few years. And I had a whole cast, and Joe came over to see my debut in Hair with his wife Vic. They were becoming like, I know that he was connected, but they were like parents to me. I can only speak of them in how they related to me. They were incredible to me until they unfortunately had both died. I saw them as surrogate parents and just incredible people. And they came over to see my debut, and I got the whole cast of the musical Hair touring Europe involved in dubbing orgy films.
All right. That's awesome.
Awesome.
Including some swinger party shit from the 60s they'd found on a floor somewhere. All kinds of stuff.
That'd be a fucking blast.
Right?
Voicing that with all your friends. Was,
oh my gosh. That's awesome.
We had so much fun. doing this, you know, some of the movies were ludicrous and some of them were just outrageous, like some of the stuff that came over from the Soviet Union, how they got porn out from behind the Iron Curtain to be dumped onto video in the U.S. market, I will never know. But they did.
Well,
and
there's a will
everything that came out of the Soviet Union was a gangbang because they could find 100 men willing to do it and maybe one woman who would lie there.
Just lay
wait for it to be over. And then, you know, it was that quality of absolute garbage. You know, it would burst out of a car or it was in a, it's not a hammam in Russia. What's it called? The bath in Russia.
You are far more worldly than I am.
I'm saying we are not worldly.
There's one for men. There's one for women. There's sauna. There's steam. And you go rolling in the snow. And one of them was shot in a, Russian bath. Banya.
Yep. I've never heard that word in my life. Banya. So there was no way I was going to give it to you.
It was shot in a banya. And it had about 35 guys and one sort of weaselly looking guy. And I had to be the voice of all the guys and try to sound Russian. 35 guys. And it was hard to keep them together because sometimes you're not seeing faces. You know, I had to kind of memorize body parts. And then the little wormy guy gets the girl out, who gets up from the table naked after being fucked, I don't know how many times. And he runs out into the snow, and suddenly she's fully dressed again without any cuts. And he gets her to the street, and then he goes running back into the banya. And the guys then attack him for letting her go, and they gather around him, and they all start shoving their dicks in his mouth. And that's where the movie ends.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was not pretty.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had to imagine what's that going to sound like?
Man.
I've got to do at some point, I have to do the book to tape for this once. I'm coming out to January 2025, but you guys were too good to miss when Stephanie put it. I thought, no.
Yeah.
This is right up my alley.
Hilarious, dude. Yeah. Absolutely hilarious. I love it. So I do got to ask you, so before you decided to get to kind of float through the world, what was your plan? Did you want to be, you know, like I went to school to be a musician. That was my original plan. I was going to be a music teacher.
Right.
I played tuba, and then I kind of skirted off, became a lead singer of a rock band. Found out that chicks really liked it when I sang, which worked out really well. And then I kind of became, I was like, oh, I'm good at sales, real estate, and now I'm back to porn.
Back to
not doing real people work.
It's quote, real unquote. People work. Don't discount
yourself. Quote, unquote.
I will not allow you to do that.
I appreciate it.
Real friends of mine have done this work. They're real people to me, and they're beloved.
I appreciate it. I think of it as more of a, I guess, a joke out to my friends, you know, my way of being like a, you know, you guys think this is a joke, but I'm putting in 60 hours a week.
Yes, we are working far harder than you think that we are.
Right.
So.
You'd have to pay me a fortune to get me to talk about Taylor Swift. So it's work. I don't even really fucking know. I've never heard her. I know she's some generic blonde that is dating some guy. I don't even remember who. Who cares?
I'll break out the guitar right now and give you the best Taylor Swift of your life. But
I know, thank you.
You might get copyright on this one.
I can't have T Swift after me with the copyrights.
An actor when I was a kid. So I went from Shakespeare to porn. That's ultimately what it was. And so performing was very natural for me. Even just the voice work, and I was good at it. And I did a number of legitimate films as well, some classic movie restoration, because I'm good at aping voices, you know.
So that's the link I was looking for right there.
It was just always good.
You had something artsy already, which was your acting. And for me, it was my being able to be a musician, which made me, you know, comfortable being a performer.
I don't know what it was for me.
You just got ripped into
the news many a time in front of an audience. You know, and recently, oh God, this was a trip. Jimmy Rado, who wrote the musical Hair. Are you familiar with it?
Okay.
Yep. I know Hair, yeah.
Okay. Well, I was Claude in Hair, the young innocent. Beautiful blonde boy. It's a little less blonde and a little more white now, but fuck it. Jimmy had written that he wanted me to perform at his memorial when he died. And he had put that into his will. Now, I had not sung in public in years, and certainly not to do concert work. And I was supposed to close the show and do these songs as Claude. They had to lower it two octaves. I couldn't even approach those high notes anymore. So here I am in front of hundreds of people at the St. James Theater in London. And it floored me because first number, we got the first standing ovation of the night.
Oh, wow.
Second number, that's awesome. We got another one. Third number, we got another one. And they said, you're going back out there and you're going to sing the only other song Claude had, Where Do I Go? Sorry, you have no rehearsal. Sorry, we haven't had time. Do it in the original key. Get through it.
Oh, no.
And so I was... The voice of God went through me because I was out there, Wistav, and I hit all of the notes, all the way through.
That's
the
awesome.
End.
That's awesome.
And I don't know how I did it. I swear I was spiritually, a ghost was in my body helping me because
See,
I don't have those notes.
I think I can handle some of the situations that people would be more freaked out in filming, at least, because of some of the terrible, like, on stage situations I've been in.
Okay.
That I've just been like, I have to, like, fucking get through. Like, to me, my worst ever flub, like, the worst thing ever, worse than anything that I could have, like, done in, like, a porn film. So, like, I was at Arlington, okay. National Cemetery.
Yes.
And I was playing taps. I went to school to play tuba.
Right.
And I can play brass. I'm a good brass player.
Right.
Like, definitely good enough to play taps. And I had done it the year prior. I went out to go play taps in front of all these Marines and stuff. It was not an official military ceremony, or they would have had a Marine there, but
right.
It was like a throw together thing. I had the trumpet. I could not get my fucking notes out, man. I'm sitting here trying to play it. The rain's coming and the trumpet's cracking and everybody's staring at me.
Oh no.
And I'm in the most, you know, sacred place in, Washington, D.C., supposedly,
right.
You know. And this was for my brother. It was a ceremony for my brother.
Right.
And I had to just stop halfway through and be like, guys, I don't know what the hell's happening. But
gonna restart.
I'm going to put this down, and we're going to be done here. And to me, after that, anything can happen to me during filming, you know. And it's not going to be as bad as that, you know.
Okay. I don't know if I've ever heard that one.
No, you haven't told you that one?
Really,
that one just came to me when he was talking about that, when he was like, I got up there and it was like, what the hell happened? That's what I was hoping was going to happen to me by pushing through, was that there was going to be this just spark of electricity that allowed me to play the right notes suddenly.
Well, the electricity was with me in London at the time. So that's
why. Obviously, you stole it from me.
Right. I've got the worst one. Do you know who Jerry Butler was?
No.
Not sure I do.
Jerry Butler was around the same time as Ron Jeremy. Raw Talent was his big claim to fame in the porn world. I got to know him later after I had some surgery, and he picked me up and carried me. He was driving a school bus in New York at the time. Picked me up and carried me because he saw me struggling on crutches in the snow and he couldn't stand that. That's how I got to know Jerry. Wonderful person. But once he found out what I'd done, he told me what he'd done, and we ended up having a lot of conversations about that world. But he told me one time he had to do anal sex with a girl, which was not his favorite thing, but, you know, he did it. And she had an accident on him, as it were, and flooded out. And he pulled out and then vomited on her.
No.
I mean, well, look.
All right, guess what? You think that is horrible? Of course, they threw the footage away. No, they didn't throw the footage away. They sold it to a German company and put it on a compendium video of the most grotesque moments of porn. And it became one of the most downloaded things. He went to Germany at one point and was being asked, how did you manage to do it exactly at the moment we see the shit on your dick? You vomit. It's perfect. How did you manage to do it? Oh my gosh.
Hey, man. Always count on the Germans.
Yeah, oh, my gosh. Well,
I live there most of the year. I'm only in Paris part-time, so.
Do you? Okay. That's awesome. Oh, yeah. We have her dad is quite worldly. He travels.
Quite a bit, too.
He travels. He gets to go to all the cool places and tell us about it. One day we want to be like him.
Yeah.
But we got to make enough money doing this first, and then maybe get our kids off to college, you know, something like that.
Oh, yeah, if you've got kids, yeah. My son is grown up. I didn't have enough money. I didn't have anything. I just thought the U.S. is going to collapse. Let me get out before it does. And I moved to Germany, stayed with a distant relative, found a sublet, found a job, ended up changing careers, and never looked back. I just wanted out. And now I'm a fucking writer.
We moved to Florida, which I think that's the same thing, right? Moving to Florida is the same thing as moving to a different country.
Basically.
Well, it kind of is.
So you found a writer?
Because Florida is such a big tourist destination, you might be less brutalized by the collapse of so many industries. And Ron DeSantis has very publicly said, you know, come to Florida. And so your economy is doing better than most states right now.
Yeah, look, I don't feel one way or another about Ron DeSantis, but I did also add his last name to my cat. That way I can stay politically neutral and I can say I both love Ron DeSantis unconditionally, and Ron DeSantis likes to put his asshole in my face while I sleep.
And both are probably true about both of them, so, but I just go with it. So anyway, during the lockdown, I wrote this first book about sex. And then I had a voice in my head that wasn't my voice telling me stories, literally like the muses. And I wrote a second book that's coming out June 11th, and it's part of a whole series. I've written the first three, and they're all scheduled for publication about 6 months apart.
That's awesome, man. Well, yeah. Congratulations on getting that stuff out. I know it is so hard, especially with ADHD, man. I would love to sit down and do that. And one day I hope I can.
But I'm not a little bit
like you. And do you know how I do it?
I need life advice.
People think you have to sit down and write a book. You don't. Oh, you went away. Oh, there you go.
That's all right. We're going to stay all here. Right. My other camera died, but we're good. All right. Audio's still the same.
There we go.
You don't write a book all at once. You write a book in pieces. So I've never probably written more than 5 pages at once. Because this is what I have to get down. The tough part for me is when the editor starts working on it and I have to focus, because I have a tough time with that. And the focusing with the editor and getting that right. And then I got the galleys the other day and the cover was wrong. They used the wrong image. The typeset was wrong. I found things that were centered rather than left margin. So I'm going over it, but I'm not going over it constantly. I have until the 25th of May. So I go over it one chapter at a time, check everything, make the corrections, send them in, you know, and then I don't know how the typesetter fucked up so badly, but this has been an international publication. I was in Germany, my agent's in Australia, my publisher's in Paris, and my printer's in the US.
Wow. Okay. So you're everywhere.
And it will be everywhere except Amazon. We will not be distributing through their platform because of their abhorrent labor practices.
Okay.
Fair. Well,
if Amazon owned OnlyFans, they'd be taking 90%.
Okay.
Well,
I believe it.
I believe that too. I will keep opinions to myself because we have a meeting with OFTV.
Yeah. Coming up soon.
Well, I don't know OnlyFans terribly well, other than to know of its existence and to see clips on Twitter constantly. On Twitter, when I put the Filthy Blonde, title of my book, account up there, porn accounts started following me like crazy because they thought that's what I was going to do. And I followed them all back. And so I see a lot of things. It's interesting to me how much more people are willing to put out on Twitter/X than I ever saw on screen when I was dubbing movies in the 80s and 90s. They'll just put it out there from their bedroom, no cost.
That's what makes it so hard to make a living here is we have you know, people that are giving it out for free.
And you're like,
we have one video that it's an hour long. It's a gangbang thing. Yeah. And it is fucking incredible. My voice cracked.
Yeah, I was to say.
I'm going to repeat that. Let me sound a little manlier. You have it is incredible, sir.
Yeah, and you can't sound as manly as me. No one can, so don't even try.
It's awesome, but like we at one point we're like, all right, it's $20. Nobody wants to buy it. We're like, no, fuck that. This is literally a $100 film. Like it is $100. It is worth every friggin' penny.
Right.
And now that we've just said, you know what, nobody's going to get it for less than that. People are buying it for it because they realize that you're not going to just cave.
Right.
And that you've set this is your price. Not enough people are willing to say, this is what I am worth.
Right.
And I will not accept less for it. And sometimes that means you're not going to get a dollar right away, and that sucks.
But eventually it will pay off in the long run.
If you keep taking it cheaper, you just, you know, it cheapens everybody.
Yeah,
so.
you're selling yourself short.
I remember having the biggest argument when I was working in food tourism with a company I worked for. I had represented Chef PJ in Paris, who was doing a tour like nobody else was doing. Have you ever been on a food tour? Do you know what that is?
Nope.
Most food tours are sort of a sweet, superficial look at the city. Now we're going to taste a Macron. Now we're going to taste a baguette. Now we're going to taste a croissant. Now we're going to taste the French interpretation of a chocolate cookie. I mean, they're really pretty lame. It's the five cheapest carbohydrates they can find. But Chef PJ was doing this immersive spend the day like a Frenchman. 6-hour tour. You have a croissant and coffee, and then you go to each store you shop. You go to his restaurant, and you have a multi-course feast. And then you go on a dessert tour. Whole different thing. And they started selling it at $89. Pissed me off because I was on commission, right? I pushed and pushed and pushed until they finally upped it to $129, and then it sold 10 times as many tickets because it wasn't discounted anymore and people thought they were getting something exclusive, which they were.
Right.
That is one of the big things I pulled away from real estate, and I had to step back and really, like you've said, accept that this is a real job. And say, no, I know what I'm doing, but like pricing is a method of marketing just as anything else is.
Right.
And you can use a price to make somebody feel that something is more important or less important, depending on how you discount it or present
right.
it.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with having a price. I have nothing wrong with it. Oh, here's a fun thing I did. I didn't even tell you about this. When I moved back to New York after I'd been in New Orleans, sold the country club, I ended up doing the catering for Swingers Club.
Okay.
Which was a trip and a half. I would come in at 11 o'clock and set up all the food. And these guys loved playing with the bagels when they came in at 1 a.m. But I, again, and it's the same thing, the same prejudice that people have. This was a swingers club, and it was soccer moms, and it was judges, and it was lawyers, and it was neighbors, it was actors. It was every kind of person you can imagine. And some of them have remained my friends to this day because they are lovely human beings. I don't know what this puritanical thing in the U.S. is, that people who have sex are somehow less than human. Of course, they have it, but it's hidden and dirty and only with their wives or, you know, a prostitute, and then they're mad at themselves for it. I don't get it. I think it's time to end that puritanism, which is why I'm naked in bed with you guys.
I made a new friend yesterday who's a really cool guy. He's like, he's a drummer, and he's been living in the area that we've been in for like, what, 13 years,
13 years, yeah.
And he was like, dude, I just feel like everybody else that lives here is just like a brown paper bag.
Right.
There's just no color whatsoever.
Because you don't have to be
anybody
like
anybody that I've met. He goes, but, and I'd met him a year ago.
Right.
And he and I had a good conversation, but she was going through anxiety and stuff. So I wasn't in a position to be able to play music with him at the time.
Right.
And then we recently had to come out to our family and say, hey, we're doing OnlyFans as a living, and we have this podcast that's out. You might see our face.
Right. We were giving him a heads up.
He saw this post because he was still friends with me. And he was like, dude, I don't even care what it is that you do. It's the fact that you had the courage to come out and just be like, this is who I am.
Right.
Like, I'm tired of hiding who I am. I'm going to live and just be the person that I am. He goes, I just need those kind of colorful people in my life because, like, everything else is so boring.
Right.
Unless you have these people that are willing to live life the way they want to live. Yes.
Right. Yes.
Exactly. And I didn't think of it like that, but.
Yeah.
My workout partner for years in New York was Enrico Vega, and he was a gay Latin porn star. And he told me that he was going to tell his grandmother on Thanksgiving what he was doing. because his grandmother had been the one who primarily raised him.
Okay.
And he was so surprised. He was very nervous. And he said, "Grandma, I got to tell you, you know, I do gay porn. That's what I do. I don't just work at the hospital." And she goes, "Good for you, boy. You always had a big pinga."
You know, that's so, the response it should be.
He was not bothered by this, at least. And it allowed him to be closer to his grandmother. Now, I did do my mother one favor. When I wrote the book, she's still quite alive and healthy and vital and wonderful. I killed her. So I made it slightly fictional in that I knew that my mother would want to be dead when this book came out. So I killed her. I had to fictionalize a few family elements just to avoid lawsuits.
My mother is probably the only family member I have that's on my side. Like, I'll tell her about, like, people, and she'll be like, "Well, is she pretty?
Right.
Do you think she'll film with you?" And I'm like, "Mom, okay, I realize that you're getting more comfortable with this, but at this point, we need to chill a little
bit. You need to
back it off." But no, I'm like, I appreciate that she's comfortable enough to, like, you know, she's trying to make that connection.
Right.
And it doesn't make me uncomfortable. I've told her that many times, is I'm going to make you uncomfortable with how comfortable I am. So, like, don't censor yourself for me.
Right.
Do you know the one thing that did make me uncomfortable?
What
I was doing a number of layouts for the live phone sex recordings, and I had to hire models for the gay and the straight ones and do a photo shoot in Los Angeles. And one of the gentlemen who showed up to do a nude audition was a former childhood star of one of those beloved shows.
Oh, okay.
And he really wanted to do it to shed his image, to appear in an ad in the back of a gay porn magazine. He's not gay, but he was built, and he really, really wanted this, and it made me so uncomfortable. Just even wanting him to put his clothes on to talk to me, I couldn't stand it because I had seen him as a kid on TV. So I called him the next day. I said, "I cannot do it. I will not do this with you, and I'm going to tell you why. It's going to ruin every opportunity you're going to have going forward. Don't do it." And then I saw him 25 years later at Joe's birthday party. He was one of the guests. And after the party was over, we went skinny dipping. He's still an exhibitionist. And he thanked me. He said, "You know, I never would have gotten the reality TV. I never would have done this. I never would have done the reunion movie. All of that would have been shut off to me. And thank you for not letting me do it." And he said, "I took your advice. I got a photographer and I got a whole bunch of private pictures when I looked really hot, and when I'm dead, they can publish them everywhere."
There you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
I think if we were in a position where we thought that I was going to have to go and get another job, or I've, you know, done anything other than, like, find my own work for the past, you know, 6-7 years,
yeah,
then we maybe would have given more concern or consideration to, you know, coming out and telling people. But it came to the point with us where it was like, if we're going to try to protect people's image that we are,
that we care about,
or not protect their image, but their feelings,
right?
We can't really market properly. It's like marketing with my hands tied behind my back, because I'm constantly saying, "Oh, I can't put it here because what's so-and-so going to think?"
Right. Or, like,
yeah, who's this going to think? So for us, when we decided, hey, we're going to embrace this, this is our, essentially how we're, you know, paying for our children to eat and stuff too, then we're just going to tell everybody, and if you don't like it, you can fuck off. And if you like us, then you can be our friend now.
Right. Like, you find out, not like who your true friends are.
No, we've had some awesome people reach out.
We've had people that I would have never expected to, like, reach out, that have reached out and been like, "This is awesome. I'm glad that you're, you know, being your true authentic selves, and you're able to be so open and honest with everybody and being vulnerable and, like, it's an awesome feeling." And yeah, I mean, maybe not everybody has reached out, and that's fine.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of people that are like, "I can't believe they did that. They're going to regret that decision."
Right. But like,
but to us, we're like, well, we'll be all right, because we're married. Like,
right.
You know,
but how, like, many kids do we have? Two?
We have two. Yeah.
It's enough.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, we're done.
One is enough.
Yeah, we're done.
Two kids and a cat. You're good.
Oh, we got two kids.
They'll soon be started on this hall.
We're done.
Well, you know,
I'm outnumbered.
I've never seen your professional work, but that's because, you know what's funny? With all of the stuff that I watched and all of the stuff that I looped and all of the stuff that I translated, I can't watch it.
Dude, it's I hear that so loud.
With Jerry, I watched Raw Talent because he did really a great acting job in that. And we fast forwarded through the sex scenes.
Yeah, you're looking at it as a as an artist at this point, right. Not as somebody trying to get off.
Right.
I feel that just so hard.
It does nothing for me. I look at it very objectively. The lighting, the sound, the this, the that.
That is...
You know, it doesn't... It fails to excite, and I know that it's...
I love it. I still love it. I'm not going to lie. I think it's an amazing art form.
But...
I cannot go on Pornhub and jerk off anymore, though.
No.
I can't be like, hey, this is going to be my path. But I appreciate it as an art form. Like, I can still look at it and be like, that was beautifully shot.
You get ideas
shot.
Or be like, that was a
I
really
love that great. Idea. Other people are going to like it. But, I mean, I'd imagine it's like maybe like a world-class chef, you know, when they cook their own food type thing. Like,
right.
You know, it's just, maybe it's not as good when you're constantly cooking your own food. I don't know.
You know what? It kind of is. I save the best for me.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
I mean,
I can cook an incredible meal for one. I mean, today I had a chicken salad sandwich, but it was on a baguette, so it's very French.
There you go. Yeah, no,
I share a dog. So I am the daddy, and Jasmine is the mommy, and the dog lives with me, and the dog lives with her because we both travel, and, you know, so, and he loves us both. He's happy everywhere.
That's awesome.
And I cook a lot for the dog.
Okay.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. Our dog would love that.
Well, he can't eat these commercial foods. They make him sick.
Yeah.
He's got a sensitive tummy.
I'm thinking ours does too.
But... Yeah, I think ours does too, yeah.
That's a different type of podcast we're getting into now at this point. You got experience in the veterinary world too, Carl?
No, but you told me it could go anywhere, so I'm just going
to. It could go anywhere.
I'm not trying to make it be about one thing or another. The book is called Filthy Blonde, the one about the adult world. What the fuck is the other one called? Oh, It's Not Always Murder. And
Filthy
then
Blonde.
Volume 2 is called You Can't Get a Man with a Gun.
Where's the best place to buy it since they can't get it on Amazon?
Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble. That is...
All right.
Barnes & Noble.
Is it going to be in stores at Barnes & Noble, just online?
Or both?
It's going to be online and in stores, and you can order it from any store. Barnes & Noble did something wonderful because we let them know we're not distributing through Amazon, and so they did a big print order, which they don't normally do for books like this.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
It's detective fiction set in 1945, but it's accidental. You know, the guy lives in the year 2000, learns how to let go of the year 2000 through a series of meditations, ends up in 1945, naked in a shower, and finds out that he shares the name with a private detective and just goes with the opportunity and becomes this guy. And it's...
I love it already.
Yeah. He went with the flow. And the whole time I'm writing it, I heard Humphrey Bogart's voice in my head.
Okay.
You're going to have to give it to me, dude. I don't have the...
I'll say, like, I have an idea, but, like...
Humphrey Bogart?
Yeah, go ahead. And
oh, God, come on. To have and have not, all of those great films, the film noir. But
Bogart, okay, thank you.
He was not a pretty man.
I get a lot of pop culture references. I do, but sir, you are far more cultured than I am. So
I don't know if I'm cultured.
You are living you're in France right now. I believe we can we can go ahead and settle it. You are more cultured than me. I'm two moves away from being considered a Florida man. So
I've been to Florida. I catered a wedding in Key West once. That was a trip.
Okay. Yeah, we've never been to Key West, but we've only been in Florida for what, like a year and a half? So
still learning it. But...
Still learning the area.
At some point, you need to drive down to the Keys. Don't stay in Key West. It costs too much.
Oh, yeah.
Drive down and see the Keys because they're a series of little islands connected by bridges. I think there's 8 of them. And they're all so beautiful.
I've been to Key Largo.
Go for photos.
But we didn't stay a whole long, you know, time in Key Largo. We were planning on going all the way to Key West, but ended up realizing how far Key West was still. So
before she met me, that's what she's trying to say.
Yeah, it was like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were like, we're going to just like stop here and say, hey, we've been to the Keys, and then we went back.
You can now see the movie Key Largo because it's a Humphrey Bogart film.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
Boom.
Yeah. Carl, well, I'm going to go ahead and I will cut it here. Wait for me for a minute until this finishes uploading. And then hopefully we can have you back. I did not know what to expect from your interview, Carl. And I had a friggin' blast here. Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. You know, that's why you just got to go with it and say, hey, but you're absolutely hilarious. And I appreciate your candidness. And if your book is anything like your personality, I think people should go check it out. I think you were super cool. Thanks again.
All right.
Common Confidential. You know, sometimes when you think about luxury, you think about like the bed sheets or the mattress that you're on. You don't necessarily think about the towels that you're going to use to clean up with afterwards. And that is probably my favorite thing about what we received from Common Confidential is these little cum rags. Y'all, it seems silly, but they are absolutely amazing. I mean, let's not get it twisted. The blanket they gave us is awesome too. Steph and I rolled around on it immediately. And the body butter that they gave us, I mean, it works for penetration too, which, you know, right up our alley. But still, the 6 washcloths, that is what I think about most often and what I try to keep clean. Because if I'm going to clean up, I'd much rather clean up with that than with a paper towel. I know it's silly, but y'all go check it out yourself, commonconfidential.com, and then use our discount code AwkwardPillowTalk. Get some for yourself. You're going to thank me later.
So, you know, part of the awkward is let's have a little talk about hygiene.
Yeah.
You know, the Summer's Eve products, you know, you always walk down. I used to walk down and be like, what flavor would I like my vagina to be this month?
Right, like the flavor of the month.
But then I realized my favorite flavor of vagina is actually not Summer's Eve.
Right.
Or Spring Blossom. It's vagina.
Yeah, it's just straight up. That's the way it is.
And when we got a sample of this healthy hoo-hoo, that was my first concern, was what is this going to smell like?
I was like, uh-oh.
I'm pretty content with the way things are smelling. And it smelled like nothing.
Yeah, it was very odorless.
Completely odorless. And, you know, you've used it before and after play sessions, which is what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Helps balance the pH. And I've actually been able to use it a few times on myself, too, because pH balance is not just for you.
Yeah.
It works for me as well. So if you're interested in giving something a go that's not going to, you know, take away that natural
flavor,
then you may want to check out Healthy Hoo Hoo and use our discount code StephanieClassX and get yourself.
So I feel like this is one of those items that everybody always laughs about. Like, you kind of saw it in movies, you're like, oh, it's a penis pump, you know, and you're thinking, what is the point of that? Well, you know, along with all of this fame that I've been given through this podcast, Bathmate was kind enough to send me a penis pump to try out. Now, I told him, you know, on a good day, I'm pushing 9 inches. He sent me the Hydro Extreme 7. And I was hesitant to use it at first because, again, I don't really feel like I need this. But the way they explained it to me is this is kind of like a workout. My dick is like an athlete, like a professional athlete, like, let's say, an NFL player. And it needs to work out daily. So I need to pump iron with this thing about 3 times a day. We do 3 minutes of pumping, and then we do 2 minutes of what we call jelking. And we do that 5 times a week, so 15 different sessions. To say that Stephanie can feel a difference is, I mean, it goes without saying. I can feel a difference because I'm feeling parts of Stephanie I've never felt before. So I know she can feel a difference. Y'all, it's fun. It feels pretty good. And, I mean, it boosts the confidence. I think you should check it out. Go ahead and get one for yourself. BathmateDirect.com/StephanieClassX